Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's the 8th of January, 2026. It's the first time I've said 2026. It's hard to wrap one's mouth around it. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. And laughing in the background is Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hi, everybody.
And again, Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Christine.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. How did you spend your New Year's?
I had a really quiet New Year. Shauna, my partner, Shauna, had a treatment in the hospital, and so we spent New Year's being really quiet. And I think I greeted New Year's smoking a joint at midnight and praying for a better world.
Sounds like
how about
it,
you?
I have a gaming group, but not virtual video games, real in life person games. So one of the hosts, we have people who have it at their houses. So one of the house hosts had a New Year's Eve thing. So we played board games and Blood on the Clock Tower. And anyone in our audience, if you have no Blood on the Clock Tower, you know how much fun it is. If you've never heard of it, you should look it up. It's pretty cool. It's a social deduction game. And actually, I think it's a really good game for people who like kind of overwhelmed these days with everything, because when you're play that game, you can only be in the moment. You cannot do anything else but be in the moment with that game. And it goes on for a few hours, and we have like sessions that go, we play for 12 hours, but we play like five games in that time. But it's really nice because it just gets you away from the world, you know, and playing the board games and doing Blood on the Clock Tower. So it's really nice New Year's.
I'm glad you had a really good New Year's. And for all folks listening out there, I hope you all had a good New Year's too. Pity we kind of had to transition into what we got. It's the 8th of January, 2026. And in the first week, the very first week of the year, the United States transited from threatening bully to, you know, actually went out and kidnapped a sovereign sitting president of Venezuela, basically became a colonial power in the Western Hemisphere. And in the same week, we just yesterday, in fact, we heard the news of Renee Good of Minneapolis, who was shot by ICE agents in what looked like a auto altercation, a misunderstanding, or road rage on the part of the ICE agents. And I don't want to draw, I don't even know if there's any room for conversation on any of this, because it's not really tech stories. Although, Christine, you made some really interesting points about cameras, yeah, about the plethora of cameras. But America's, it's, I feel like we're broadcasting to a different country or a different place now. Same people, really lots of really good people, some people who are really badly confused, but it feels different, and it got to get noted.
Well, I agree, and I do think from the, if we tie it into what we normally talk about, and we've said that tech crossover now comes with visits to the abyss, which is what this is. Normally, but first of all, I should say ICE normally has three shootings a year. They've had nine since September. But we haven't heard much about the other eight, because the other eight weren't on video. Like, they had some videos they found, or someone had body camera, and then they found out ICE lied in court. And then those cases were found for the person that was either harmed or killed. But in this case, part of what people, if you're not in the United States or if you're not in an area that's having this issue, When the ice agents come to an area to do a raid, local people, especially in areas that are continually having this all the time, they'll come out and they'll blow a whistle. And they'll blow the whistle to let other people know ICE is raiding their area. And so they did that because apparently it wasn't actually a raid, although it is being claimed to be a raid on by our administration. But one of the ICE officers had gotten stuck in the snow. And so they 20 others or more showed up according to reports. And so people thought there was an ICE raid. So they came out on their porches, started blowing their whistles. She lived there, the girl. And they started recording with their cameras what was happening. And so when this happened, instead of there being like a body cam video you have to rely on or one or two persons' videos, there are dozens and dozens of people who recorded it. So yesterday on social media, there was video after video after video, and people who have professional in analyzing these things going step by step. There's one video where they blow everything up. Anyway, so so much about what happened yesterday by the fact that there's so many videos from all the different angles. So
Videos which
and so that's
completely and absolutely refute the official ICE
yes.
and White House version of events.
So there is a, because I was bombarded yesterday by right-wing fake accounts, bots, and things. There's a video from the top that the right wing of our country was spreading around saying she ran him over. What it video is of is when he had already shot her through the windshield and moved to the side, because it's obscured part of this video, to the side. He hit her mirror on her vehicle when he moved. And so people was like, oh, she ran at him. She didn't run at him. The videos that are up close and personal show he stepped in front of the vehicle. He was about 3 feet away off the left fender. He unholstered his gun. She had not moved yet. Her wheels were turned to the right to avoid hitting anybody. And this is all in video. People can see it. And then he shot her through the windshield. And then she moved at the same time. Like he shot her as she moved, but he already had the gun out and he's already ready to shoot. And then he jumped to the side, hit the mirror on her car. And then shot two shots point blank into her face inside the window of the vehicle. And that point in our laws here, that he is not in any immediate threat or danger. So we'll see what the courts say and the investigations say. But unfortunately, the administration has taken the investigation away from the state of Minnesota. So only the DOJ
You
is
know
going to be
what?
doing it.
The investigation won't say anything. The courts won't say anything. There won't be charges. As you said, the FBI is in charge of the investigation, and it was released earlier today that the FBI has closed the investigation.
If we have a shot at it, though, it'll be because of the so much video, there'll be so much public pressure to do
There's going to be
something.
a lot, I suspect there'll be a lot of video out there refuting, again, the official story of what happened, but I got a feeling it's going to be a lot treated a lot like the conspiracies that refute the official story of what happened to JFK, and that's how it's going to be recorded in history because the investigation, such as it was, concluded that everything was cool.
Well, we'll see. I don't necessarily think that's how it's going to go, but I do think they're going to try to hamper having an investigation.
Your point being, there is a gajillion miles of what used to be called videotape. There is a gajillion megs of video of this out
Yeah.
there.
Yes. And while they tried to push that narrative yesterday that she ran over with that one video that obscures the view, it didn't take off on social. What took off on social were the legitimate videos.
The last dictate of the party was that you believe their version of events over your own memory. Or recorded history. I mean, that's badly paraphrasing Orwell, but that's pretty much that. Okay. By the way, widely available at YouTube and other fascist organizations near you.
And also, just to note real quick before I move on, she was a mother. She did have three kids. Her 6-year-old son already lost his father, so he is an orphan at this time. So I just wanted to put a heart out for her because apparently she was a wonderful person from everybody that knew her and was very caring and compassionate. So it is very sad what happened.
Okay. Now on with the show.
Yeah, some of the show.
We
The
did
thing
have
is
to
life.
mention that stuff. We did have to mention it because, again, this is we have a front row seat to watching history change from a technologist's point of view.
Yeah.
And this is history as it happens. In less important history, but really important to the digital marketing industry, December 29th, 2025, the December Google Core update finished rolling out. There was actually quite a bit, quite a deal of volatility, especially for publishers. Not a lot, actually, it was a lot of publishers were waiting for this core update to see if they could, one final hopeful recovery chance from helpful, and they didn't get it. This was pretty brutal on publishers.
Except for some of the big publishers did pick up traffic. It is a core update, so anyone who's trying to recover from it, the tips I'll give people, just because I've been doing it since 2018, I focus on these a lot. It can be anything in the core ranking algorithm, so it can be related to content or structure or anything of that nature. But always, it seems to be there's a very large technical component. And that technical component could have been sitting on your site for 10 years and Google didn't care. And you're like, oh, I'm going to fix it someday. And Google's like, we're tired of wasting our resources on your technical issues. So we are going to demote you and hopefully you fix it. And you can't really get your full traffic back until the next core update. But look at so Google does this on your money or life sites. And that consumes like publishers, anyone with a credit card. So most sites on the internet. They do it at the keyword level because they don't know your money or life site. So look for your root keywords. Look which ones dropped over 30 or 40% as a group, and that's where your issues are going to be. So.
And it might sound weird that Google is going after issues that have existed for several years they hadn't cared about before, but you got to understand that Google is using more and more resources crawling AI and then creating generative responses for a good number of search results. So expending resources on things that are just slowing its crawler down that could be ignored, a couple of years ago. Google wants to clamp down on this now again to save resources. So like Christine said, it could have been something that they've been ignoring for a very long time.
It's
Now
always
it's a
something
very
big.
real problem.
Yeah, it's always something big, obvious. You've probably known about it. And if you fix the technical, I almost always get a full 100% back on the next update. And I'll get more than 100%. And I can never figure it out. And I did finally figure it out. And that's because I do all the core elements because we don't know what they actually hit. And so those other core elements, which were not the problem because they didn't hit those, got an up boost during the next core update. So you get the recovery boost and then you get that boost for the other things that you improved. So, but on because I always fix technical first. And usually we just get done with everything right before it runs again. And technical always gives me 100% return on traffic. So.
If you're looking at Search Console and you notice your link counts seem to be lower, at least as reported by Search Console, probably true. Well, other people notice this as well. But Search Console has never reported the full spread
Yeah,
of links coming into. I mean, seriously,
this
have
is
they
really
ever?
bad though. No, they haven't. They only do a portion. That's why, like, when I worked with Dave Davies, the former co-host of the show and once my business partner, he had like his own crawler, and then he used three other companies' crawlers, like Ahrefs and things like that,
And
and then he used
Majestic or
Search
something, yeah.
Console. Yeah, because he's like nobody has the full link profile, but you just do your best to get as many as possible. But in this case, these are like a lot. So someone who had 350,000 external links were down under 150,000. So it's a lot. So
As
if you
reported by Google.
right, so if you see
Now,
this as USC,
these guys are extracting the data from Google and running it through Looker Studio, because in Google Search Console, you're only going to see 1,000 maximum
yeah,
anyway.
that's true. Yeah, or they're using the API one of the two, but yeah, but they do. Barry Schwartz's articles from SEO Roundtable does believe it's probably a bug. I do too, because why would you drop like 50% of people's link report? But make sure you're always using if you're following your link values and you're checking in on them and maybe you're adding link value, like getting yourself published and stuff. Make sure that you're using multiple tools to check it.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'm going to be contrary to you and Barry. I think this is Google making a choice to limit the information they're giving out, not because they're limiting information, but because they're, again, saving resources. They're not going to troll the entire link profile of a website and report and track and report back on it on a regular basis. That takes way too much effort. That's going to tell you who your major links are from now on. That's my guess.
I think it's probably true because I keep trying to demote the idea that links matter, and I can tell you they definitely do because the site last year never got any links, so they never did anything, and I couldn't get them to work on their link profile. They had like 1,000 links, so it's like they never got traffic, never got visibility.
You know
So.
what? I'm in the interesting and really unique position of guiding a brand new, spanking new website from
Oh, that's
brochure
always
site to
that's so much
information
fun.
sites to actual like interactive site. Okay, this is a really cool experience, and links matter.
They
I'm
do.
watching us as we build links get so much more momentum.
Links matter, and internal linking is hugely important. So on a site I'm working on with Bill Hartzer, he just went through and did a cleanup on the internal link profile, and we got about a 30% boost. And I've seen that over the last 4 or 5 years. Yeah, it only started about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, where they started amplifying that, and I'm not sure the reason for the amplification. Google hasn't even mentioned it, but it's common in the industry that this is happening, common
Well,
knowledge. So,
you want to get like some fun side eye off of Bill just for kicks. It's always good getting fun side eye off of Bill. Congratulate him on the AIO he was performing. When
on
you work
what?
with link, well, working with links with internal links, you're helping move a crawler around the website and
Oh,
helping
yeah.
contextualize the information
That
from
makes
one page to
sense.
another, which is really, really helpful for teaching, instructing, and teaching AIs.
That makes sense, actually. That would make
So
sense why they
congratulate
sort
him on
of,
that work. He will look at you and he'll
yeah.
get all red faced and give you the side eye and stuff, and it'll be so much fun. But like, this is kind of what he was doing. And when people are pushing like this big AI, big secret around AIO, that's half the work. It's just contextualizing what the information is all about,
Very
which incidentally, it's
true.
good old SEO.
SEO is dead. It's not. Our
Well,
hopes
no,
are.
SEO and SEO is going to change. And in some cases, even though it's the new acronym, I think, is kind of self-aggrandizing the evolution of a regular SEO technique. It is an evolution in that technique. So
True. I feel it. Yeah.
is it a distinct on its own service? Not so much. It's just good old content SEO.
Yeah, pretty much. I realized I missed a story today. And can I just mention it really quick? It plays right into this. Google John Mueller answers if you should invest in GEO. Even Google says don't use the term GEO. But basically he says it depends, and only if you're getting traffic from it. Sure, you should invest a little in it, but what you call what do you say? But thinking AI is not going away. But thinking about what you call AI is not going away. What you call AI, but it's really machine learning. That's why I said that. But thinking about how your site's value works in a world where AI is available is worth the time. Also, be realistic and look at actual usage metrics. Understand your audience. What percent is using AI, what percentage is using Facebook, blah, blah, blah. So basically, he just said it depends, and you don't really need to do a lot for it because we already know it's all based on SEO anyway. So.
Well, and that comes down to the age-old resource allocation estimates that you make as an SEO. You have
Yeah.
like 10 tasks, but you only have time to do five of them, or you only
And
got
the money to
enough
do two.
pull with the organization to do five of them, or whatever, right? So that's what this is. That's exactly what John was saying. What are your priorities? Focus on that.
Yeah, definitely. But not to spend a lot of the time on that, if it's especially if it's not returning traffic. Anyway, so
You know what?
we got some, what's
By
that?
the way, if you got nothing else to do, Spend time on your content. There's always you
Yes.
always benefit spending time on your content.
You do. Yes, you definitely do. And making sure your site is has a readiness for being read by the large language model crawlers.
Okay.
Where's
Microsoft
some
wants a
job information?
job information. If you are a very senior project
Yeah,
manager,
these are all senior. Yeah.
like seriously senior, because Microsoft wants you to work at the highest level at Bing, killing spam and building trust in AI search. This comes from Fabrice Canal, the guy who like runs Bing Search. Senior product manager, MAI platform. It'll be a partner facing, responsible for partner success through delivery management of cross-functional programs and solid partner internal stakeholder relationship across future product teams. Good God.
You know what? I hate when they write their job descriptions with AI. It's always like this. You can always tell.
We need someone to stop this AI slop.
While we use AI slop to write our descriptions. So it looks
We're
like
not
a
getting
Fabrice
Fabrice as a
Canal.
guest.
If you're in the industry and you have the skill sets, Fabrice Canal, you probably know, so it'd be good to reach out to him because he probably has some say in who gets hired.
And
And then
Fabrice
there's
Canal, if you want somebody to write your want ads in the future, please don't hesitate to
Yes.
give us a call.
Jim could write a very beautiful one in. And then we're
Almost
moving
as
on.
much fun as this one, I swear.
Yes. And we're moving on to Google. Google has two high-level jobs. Jim, do you want to?
Okay, so Google is hiring AI answer and search quality software engineer. This is to help the AI answer quality team deliver AI overviews to users' hard and complicated queries in search engine result pages and in AI mode. It pays 166 to 244 a year, plus bonuses, plus equity, plus benefits. And seems to be located in Boston, in Cambridge.
And this is definitely someone who has a code background. Probably machine learning would really help. By the way, Jim, I have never seen search results pages. I've always seen search engine results pages. So I didn't, when I saw SRP in this article, I went, what is that? It always has an
The
E in there.
E was always small in search engine result pages,
Yeah.
in
So
my
I've
mind at any
never.
rate. It's always SERP. So,
I've just never
this
seen
next
SRP.
one would be an oh my God job. Like, seriously, I looked at this and thought for a second, wow, am I qualified? Which I'm totally not, but I really wanted to be. Google is hiring a chief of staff on search intelligence, strategy, and operations. This is the person who is in charge of all of the staffs that run Google. Or Google
Yeah.
search. Oh my,
You get to be the
that's an
right
oh my
hand.
God job.
Yeah, read the description a little though. It's interesting. I thought it'd be highly technical, but it really isn't. Unless in
Okay,
the,
so
you know.
first off, it's centered in Mountain View. It pays 214 to 302 a year. You'll be working directly for Bijan Patel. He's hiring a chief of staff to work with himself and his leadership team. They're looking for operators who want to help architect the next era of search with AI. Google search is changing faster than ever before. This role will ensure that Google's engineering organization evolves at the pace of their innovation. They're looking for a tech program manager, strategy, product ops leader ready for high velocity experience at the heart of Google's AI transformation. Okay, so here's the job description. You're going to be responsible for a 2,000 plus person team delivering an AI first future, driving alignment, velocity, and operational excellence required to reinvent search. By the way, Google's reinventing search completely. This is the signal.
You
Trying
know
to I'm
what?
trying I'm trying to I'm trying to pull out the really important parts of this, because a lot of this is corpro speak.
Yeah.
Basically, you're going to be managing the teams that make search function. So think of like a incredibly complicated organization chart, you'll be second in command on that.
Yeah, and the
Wow.
great thing is they should hire an SEO for this, I think. One of the
Well, I think
senior
so too.
people. Right? Yeah, because who would better could tell you how to do search than like a Martin McDonald or a Ryan Jones or something of that nature?
It would have to be somebody of that stature, like somebody
Yes.
who, like, actually, this is Ryan Jones. This job, I should zap him after this
Yeah,
because I
actually,
seem
I
to
was
not
going to
go for
send
it.
it to him. I was going to send it to him too. So, but yeah, so it's a job that really Google, if you're listening, you should hire an SEO for this.
Oh, by the way, Google, if you're listening, hire Ryan Jones. You couldn't go wrong with him, honestly.
Exactly. You really should.
Okay. Moving on. So those are two really cool opportunities. Moving
Yeah,
along.
very.
This is a weird opportunity. The gaming company Razer is getting into AI holograms. They've introduced the Consumer Electronics Show just happened in Vegas,
Yeah, so
CES
it's
2026. So this is one of those weird products from CES. Friend in a bottle.
friend in a
These
bottle. That is the
guys are
name,
making
folks. This is not joking.
a small glass cylinder featuring a 5.5-inch animated desk buddy that will interact with you, coach you, give you advice, gaming advice if you need, and entertainment, all powered by xAI's Grok. So I'm sure they'll be of age, I should hope.
Maybe. Yeah, but it's
Probably
weird. It's
clothed.
like it's quite large. It's not a small device. It's like a hologram the size of a human if you look at the pictures. So I don't know, the whole it's a whole AI companion thing. But it got kind of, not the greatest reviews from the people who actually saw it. They thought
Products
it
like
was
this
kind of
never
weird.
work. Products,
Well,
even aside from the fact that it's a terrible and exploitative idea, products like this never work. The company has to be like three different things at the same time rather than focusing on one specialty. It has to be a
yeah.
hardware manufacturer, it has to be an importer and exporter, and it has to be a software manufacturer. That's an incredible amount for one company to do at the same time. So it's probably going to do a craptastic job on all three rather than a great job on one of the three.
Also, something very interesting from the article from Fast Company about this is research shows that for deep emotional venting, by the way, people should not do this with GPT. This is not good. Users currently prefer voice-only interfaces because they feel safer and less judged. So, without a face to scrutinize, we avoid the social anxiety of being watched. However,
Although,
some, you know, some.
do you really feel judged by something that's 5.5 inches tall?
Oh, is it five?
Like
It
five
looks
and a half
big.
inches tall, the thing's not even a half foot
I
tall.
thought it was bigger,
You
so
could
not as
step
big.
on it.
Yeah. Well, but we know that these release oxytocin in the brain if you have deep conversations with the GPT. So it could, if it was judging, you might care what, because that's the love chemical. So anyway, so it's just kind of interesting.
The not so great kazoo.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so in case your little desk buddy, your friend in a bottle, helps you take your own life, there's precedent now for major lawsuit, major settlements. Google and Character.ai have agreed to settle lawsuits over teen suicide linked to their AI chatbots. Yeah.
Yeah,
So,
so character it's
sorry?
interesting though how it's interesting though with Character AI because it's a separate company, but Google's part of the lawsuit. And what they're saying is that the guys who started Character AI are from Google and they brought what they knew from Google to Character AI, and so therefore Google is also responsible.
Well, the prop they worked with, they left in 2021 to form Character AI, but Google hired them back in the summer of 2024 and used some of Character AI's
Oh, okay. I didn't
licensed
see that part in the
IT
article. Okay.
in Gemini, and Gemini went and helped add to the conversation. So
Okay. I didn't know that part.
they are kind of Google. I'm sorry, Google is kind of tied in here tangentially.
Yeah, and also an OpenAI, it's they include the lawsuit involving a 16-year-old California boy whose family claims that it acted as a suicide coach. I will tell you, I have seen the transcripts from four of the cases where people unalived themselves. It is pretty gobsmacking because it's not like back in our day that's like, don't listen to this because it'll make you sad and depressed. It's not that. It's literally telling them how to like. The one kid said, maybe I should leave the noose out so my family sees it. And it's like, no, this is our secret. You're brave. You should not let them see it. Stuff like that. It was pretty bad.
Okay, so folks, we know that AIs should not be trusted for, counseling of any form whatsoever, psychological counseling whatsoever. If you or your children are using AIs for psychological counseling, you are highly advised. I'm not saying this to be facetious, but you're highly advised to seek real counseling for
Yes.
real.
And I hate to do this to you, Jim, because this story should be here. Jim, people that listen don't know. I had problems with my computer this morning. I need to add this one story from OpenAI to what we're talking about today on that level. OpenAI is opening up a health GPT.
Oh, stay away from that. I saw that, and I saw you worrying about that and f worrying over that in Facebook. Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
OpenAI and ChatGPT are not doctors. They have never been to med school. They don't know your history. They don't know you.
Also don't analyze anything. And let's also add to that, their stated error rate in their 5 point whatever version is up to 48% of the time. So you do not want to trust something that's 35% to 48% of the time wrong about something with your health. And there was a girl who died last week following a GPT for a supplement and got overdosed on the supplement and died.
So,
So do not use this. They did not use this. You just
and
don't use it.
webmasters, please don't offer
Promote it
this
either.
to other people. Like, don't base your offers around a online counseling or AI,
And
artificial
what's
intelligence
that?
health advice, because you're probably not doing good for the individual.
And one last thing, they want you to connect your medical records to their GPT. And as you and I know, once something goes in the GPT, it cannot be taken out of the GPT.
Well,
So they're going
actually,
to
yeah,
use
we have
it.
another story coming on a little bit later about data pilfering through
Yeah.
AIs. So
Yeah. So
think about that.
just
Keep that
my
in mind for a
strongest
couple
warning.
seconds.
Jim and I do these stories every week. We work with this stuff in our profession. I go to conferences and learn about this stuff. Do not use their health. They're trying to find a way to make money, and it should not be on the back of your health diagnosis
Okay,
because
actually,
they can't
I'm gonna
diagnose
reverse stories
anything.
really quickly. 18 becomes 17, 17 becomes 18. ChatGPT is and other AIs are open to data filtering. ChatGPT apparently has discovered a new data filtering attack vector. It's called
All these
Zombie
names.
Agent.
Enter zombie agent, son of Shadow Leak. It sounds like a thriller, like a Bond thriller or something.
I remember back in the days of the original days of the web, hackers were given this whole mysterious this whole MO of like mysterious sleuths and stuff, and I got the same vibe happening about like people trying to break and exploit LLMs.
Yeah, this is a story in Ars Technica, by the way. I just want to make sure we credit it.
So
So,
I'm not gonna go into how this works, but basically, if it goes into the AIs, it becomes part of the greater knowledge base. And if prompted properly, the information can be extracted back from the knowledge base. So if you put, say, your I don't know, your super secret business feasibility study into ChatGPT, and your potential competitors know that you're doing the study, they might be able to mess with or, retrieve your results
or like your
if
health
they don't really know
information,
what they're doing.
or your health information. So
Or
part
in
of the
this case, your
problem,
health information, sure.
yeah. So part of the issue with LLMs is because it's so different from code. So the part of the article is about the fact that this is a continuing problem that they can't solve. It's called prompt injection, and the reason it works is I could send Jim a document with a prompt injection in it and white on white text, a Google Docs, and if he had a connector from OpenAI to his Google Drive, I could actually access this Google Drive and steal it by putting that information into the white on white text. The problem with the large language models is they cannot discern a bad prompt, a nefarious prompt, basically language written somewhere in what it sent, from real prompts or from real words. So if someone puts in a website in the HTML code something nefarious, it will read that too, because it just reads the code. It doesn't know the difference between a comment and a H tag or a, right? So in this case, the problem they're saying is, and this is all, it's all, it's not just OpenAI, it's just OpenAI is the biggest probably target. Like back in the day when Mac didn't get hit by viruses because nobody cared about Mac because nobody used them. Now it's a big deal. So, but anyway, so that what they did is it's an Ars Technica article. You can read about the tests that they ran and what the researchers found. But basically, you have to just be really careful when you use these things because it's very easy for someone to get information from you because it's a language thing and they have to put it guardrails for all the language and they can't. So it's not like code where there's a gap in the code and you fix the code and now the vulnerability goes away. What happens is they fix this guardrail. They got around and then they find another guardrail. And that leads us into one of our next stories, too.
Grok is I don't know what happened, but the other day I started seeing stories about Grok being used to undress women and children. I don't know if Grok started doing this on its own or if for some reason suddenly its users started prompting it to do it, but Grok started producing deep fake content of women, celebrities, and underage children. The Internet Watch Foundation, based in the UK, reported that the Grok AI chatbot Grok generated sexual imagery of children, and they confirmed their analysis discovered criminal imagery of children between age 11 and 13, which has been created using the tool. Christine, why is this suddenly a story? Had Grok not done this before?
Grok had done it before, but what happened is the Internet Watch Foundation, which is the one you mentioned that monitors these things, found that it suddenly exploded on the dark web. So they were creating basically, I think they call them CSAM when it's the funk like the legislation name against child. I don't
Well,
know if they should.
creating and distributing images of child pornography is really, absolutely, totally illegal.
Thank you. I didn't know if we
It's
could say that
so
word or not.
mind-bendingly illegal, it's
Yeah.
very illegal.
And making it too now. That's a new thing, I think, with the AI stuff. But anyways, they
You
found
know what?
it.
Possessing child porn, you don't even need to distribute it. Possessing it is
Yeah.
really illegal,
Yeah, just.
insanely illegal, and it should be illegal.
Yes. And so this
So.
is, so they found that there was just a big increase of it on the dark web and people using it. And so they just wanted to send, you know, the alarm out to let people know that this was going on. So, and I mean, they could just create fake children. They also could take children that are online. So this is always why it's very important that if you
Oh,
have children and you're posting pictures, that you make sure it's private without any information in the photo where people can find
they
you,
were
trace
taking
you, or
photos.
find your
They were
photo.
taking photos of children in movies, young people who'd appeared in recent films, and undressing them and publishing them on Grok and publishing them on X.
And by the way, this is officially called an undressing problem. That's what they call it with
An
AI.
undressing problem. It's kiddie. It's an undressing problem. It's
Well, I mean,
child
for
porn.
everybody, not just the kids. They're talking about just in general, like everybody who's been
It's
undressed
an
by it.
undressing
Like
problem.
there was a there was when this came out on Twitter, and Musk's reaction was poor. There was a lot of undressing Elon Musk, not fully, just
Ew.
top. Yeah, I know, but there were like a thread of
That
photos.
really should be a crime. Ew.
Yeah, get of photos of him like in various bathing suits. So, but anyway,
Okay.
yeah. So be careful, and when it's your own children, be very careful about where you post their photos because
Yeah.
there's information also in your
Oh.
photo that can go with it. Services like Facebook will strip that information from the photo, but you don't want to just post it anywhere. And you can set it on your camera settings and not to include that information in the photo digital part of the photograph.
I couldn't imagine sharing photos of myself or of my family, if I was a younger person right now. I got the benefit of being 57 years old. Nobody's deep faking images of me.
Oh, Jim, you don't
And if
know.
they
It's
are,
private group.
they got bigger problems than I do.
Totally kidding. I'm not trying to make light of it. It's a very serious problem. It's
It's a
very,
terribly serious
it's
problem.
just
I can't
disgusting and
imagine
gross.
people sharing photos, sharing their lives any longer. I mean, could you imagine this would kill Instagram in a rational universe.
Yeah, very true.
This is not a rational universe, mind you.
Yeah, we're in the upside down.
Seems that
Yeah.
way.
I mean, from
Okay,
Seinfeld, not Stranger
speaking
Things.
of upside down silly stuff, this isn't upside down at all. It just seems to be kind of silly stuff. Bing is really, really, really trying hard to get you to notice that you can use Copilot when doing search. So hard, in fact, that they took an icon that was the size of a favicon and they've made it into the size of a radio button. Like, I'm
That's a full
serious.
button.
A
No, it's
full
actually a
button.
full button now. It's a full
I'm sorry, it's
button.
a full button, not a radio button, a
Yes,
full button. My
it's a
mistake.
full button.
It's
By the way,
almost
so
like a big red button, but not quite big.
and you don't listen to us all the time, you might not know that a couple weeks ago, Microsoft decreased its goals for Copilot because nobody's using it. So they dropped their like I think
Life
it was
cools,
their
man.
enter yeah, their enterprise goal by 30% and their sales goal by 50% or vice versa. So it is kind of funny now that they're putting it on the home page of search to like use this, use this, use this. So yeah, they're not doing
Well,
well.
again, and not just use this, but like, which is cool. If they put up really big letters saying use this, I would almost respect it more than the kind of lame little please notice me that they did do.
By the way, I'm going to jump a story into this story because I don't know if you know what's on here, but Google t changed something too related to AI search buttons. Now when you go to do a search on like the Google, I think it's only on the let me see, make sure what it's on the Google homepage or is ever yeah, this on the homepage. The search query box on the homepage of Google has an AI mode button there. But as you start typing, it goes away and send comes up. And send is actually regular Google search, doesn't go to AI mode. So it is actually taking you away from the AI mode. So if
Why
you
would they do that?
who knows? I don't know. If you want to see what it looks like, go to Search Engine Roundtable, Google search test, blue send button in query box. So it's just kind of funny. It just disappears halfway through the writing of the query.
Okay.
So yeah, who knows? That's Google, whatever. But it is kind of funny that now Bing's like promoting it with a button instead of a radio button. Now Google's changing the AI mode to a send. Why send, right? Like, it's also weird too. Like, why send? Whoever use who puts send on a search button? I don't know.
Somebody who's working with chatbots a lot.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. You're like, where's send come from? Sorry, you can go back to the story you were going to do next. I just wanted to put that in there.
This one's boring by comparison. Google Ads is using a new AI model to catch fraudulent advertisers. It's the fun part of the story is it's called ELF, the Advertiser Large Foundation Model.
I
It
didn't
basically
pick that up when I
analyzes the
read
living.
it.
It analyzes the living heck out of anything, any advertisement that comes up, text, images, video, account age, billing details, historical performance metrics, etc. Tries to, merge facts from all of these data points together to figure out if an advertiser is legit or fraudulent. And they figure it's going to make them much more accurate in spotting fraudulent operations.
Yeah, so they have three main points. I'll go through them really quickly. They have heterogeneous and high dimensional data, which is basically advertiser data comes in multiple formats, not just one type. So it's structured data, age of account, billing type, unstructured data, creative assets, yada, yada, yada. Hundreds of thousands of data points you just mentioned, and that causes a mathematical fingerprint basically of each one. And so that is challenged if they think there's an issue. And number two is unbounded sets of creative assets. Advertisers could have thousands of creative assets, such as images, and hide one or two malicious ones among thousands of innocent assets. This used to overwhelm the previous system. And then real-world reliability and trustworthiness. It has to be able to generate trustworthy confidence scores that a business has malicious intent because a false positive would otherwise affect an innocent advertiser. So these are three new things that are going to affect you, or maybe not. And Google Ads.
Yeah. So This is an interesting one. Before I go into the story, I just wanted to a little bit take it from this from its source. It's a new study conducted on only 500 consumers actively using AI tools. Data was collected in November. Things could have changed in December or early January. We're talking about AI after all. But according to a study that was written up by Danny Goodwin in yesterday's Search Engine Land, 37% of consumers start searches with AI instead of Google Organic. They're doing this because, well, they report being frustrated with craptastic search results, and respondents describe AI as faster, clearer, and less cluttered.
Yeah, I have a theory on that.
Well, so the way people look at search is changing. And the way they approach their information journey is changing. So people do feel traditional search fatigue. I'm not going to read through the entire study and give you all the stats stuff, but
You can read it on Search Engine Land.
check on Search Engine, an incredibly interesting read. And if the stats are to be true, and remember, this is 500 people in a massive internet universe. But AI answers appear to be gaining trust. 80% of respondents feel confident AI provides unbiased information, but 85% still double check AI answers elsewhere. So
That
that's
makes me feel
interesting.
good. Yeah,
Sorry?
because our UK friends in the industry are very, very into the GPTs right now, and they were talking about the Venezuela thing we have. We're not going to get into the political side of that right now, but one of the people asked me to read it because it was from Grok, but they asked me to read it and to see if it was fairly accurate, and it was very accurate if you don't want to include any of the negatives about what the US did. So it was technically accurate. We did this, we went there, but it didn't mention it was illegal, or it didn't mention the critiques or the criticism. So it does concern me that people think it's unbiased, because AI is definitely not unbiased. Even the best AI in the world still has biases because humans created it and it trains on human content. So there's still biases in it. But I have one theory real quick before we go.
Sure.
They're getting fatigue. Traditional search fatigue is real, right? But we know, I have noticed this for 2, 3 years now. And I honestly think, because we know he's done it before, that they made search worse to make AI answers the thing people go to.
Although it's
Because
very likely.
I get irrelevancy in search results that I never used to get in Google. And we know he did it before. We know that Sundar did it before, because it's in the DOJ testimony from 2018. So anyway, so I think that's part of the reason. But it is funny now they're trying to put Pishu away from AI mode, because AI mode is very, very, and AI overviews are very, very expensive to run.
I don't know if they did that on, if they're doing that on purpose now, or if they're I posited a couple of weeks ago on this show that Google's organic index is badly spiked by slop information to begin with. And so it's garbage in, garbage out. It's been something, it's been a rule of tech for what, like forever.
Ever, yeah.
And if we're putting slop in that we're training Google on, and Google's starting to see the slop out in the wild be confirmed as real, through its various, trust and authority algorithms. Google doesn't know what's real or isn't real, but in the olden days, it had a pretty good grasp because most of the information online was real. But the more slop that goes out there, the harder it is to discern what is and isn't real.
That's very
And
true,
I'm,
and that could be part of it for sure. For
It
sure. But
scares.
this is, I'm
I
sorry,
hope
I didn't
you're
mean to cut
right
you
and
off.
I'm wrong, because what I'm thinking scares the bejesus out of me.
Well, I think slop is a problem, but also these are query irrelevance. So I'll search for something and I'll get one result that actually matches the query, and then I'll just get bizarre stuff that like has literally no relationship, or anybody would be looking up for this thing. So it doesn't happen all the time, but it happens about 20% of my searches. So I do think that they're dumbing them down so that you'll use the AI overview and think that's the better answer.
People do have emotional responses to AI, and I think they really trust AI because from it feels like an interaction with somebody informing you rather than you having to go inform yourself based on the little precy that comes up under each search result. And so AI is like shaping the way people discover brands and influencing what brands people trust, often before they even use the brand. That is concerning from a practical standpoint, although it's quite exciting from an advertiser's standpoint.
I have a feeling though, if AI search really starts to sending real traffic, the bad old days of negative SEO and black hat SEO would become highly prevalent because these are so easy to poison these
Well,
models.
here's, and I still don't think that AI has to send traffic. AI has to, get people interested and inform you that something is there. And then the people go and how they're tending to do it now, go and tend to find it using organic search. But AI was the first thing that told them, turned them on to something, much like older people used to turn me on to new music when I was in high school. The people in the grades above me would turn me on to new music, and in turn, I would turn younger people on to new music. I think it's sort of the same way now.
Well,
But
if there's anybody out there that has a blog network or something like that, I would love for you to come up with a silly phrase and test it and
yeah.
see how easy or hard it is to get that to show up in the large language models as a brand. I don't think it'd be very hard.
I think the LLMs, people are looking at the LLMs as their, trusted friends, more
Yeah,
than their
sadly.
desktop buddy. If it tells them something is good, they're going to believe it. 63% of respondents expect to use AI more, and 59% believe AI will become the main way of finding information. Nearly half expect AI to handle tasks from end to end, start to finish. Interesting, eh?
Yeah, that's scary.
Okay. Again, this is the survey was conducted by 802, 500 consumers who actively use AI tools. Data was
Yeah,
collected in
it
November. Go check out the survey itself. You got to do a registration to get into it, which is always a bugger, but great data lead there, guys.
I will say though, there is an obvious bias. If you use people that prefer AI, they're going to be using the AI differently than just, your average Joe who's like, what is this stuff?
Well, and you know what? If that is the way you do things, Google is watching and will give you less. And maybe just maybe your experience with Google was because it knows that you're not really happy with its AI offerings. Google's Robbie Stein was suggesting again that Google is personalizing AI experiences, including overviews and AI mode. Sort of okay, so if you like getting your information a certain way, I prefer reading information. I learn a lot more when I read than when I see a video or hear audio or even in conversation. Some people need to learn from videos, some people prefer audio. Whatever you tend to click more, Google's going to start recommending more in your search results as an example of personalization.
I still haven't had a chance to ask this question. I should send it to Robbie Stein because I don't have personalization on in Google. So does it still try to personalize? I don't know. I don't want them
Yes, it
doing
does.
that though.
Yes, it does. Google will still, based on your information habits.
They shouldn't have them
It just won't
recorded.
do it as much.
No, it shouldn't be recorded because I have a personalization completely off. They shouldn't be recording them. Doesn't mean there aren't. But technically, they shouldn't be recording it because I told them not to record my personal data. So, but we'll see. I'll find out by the next show, I think. But one thing, I don't like the idea though of Google showing me more because I clicked on it. Well, that's what the personalization does anyways. Have you ever been with a client and they're like, "We're number one," and it's like, "No, you're actually like number 20," but they clicked on it so many times, Google pushed it to the top. But I go to search to find things that I like sometimes, and sometimes I go to find different things. And so if you start filtering me harder into the filter bubble, I won't see those different things. And that's not what I use search for.
That'll probably come out in the way that you enter your query as well. And I bet you over time, people will learn to phrase their queries, to get Google to basically your query is your prompt. And if you mess with your query in the right ways, Google will do stuff. So I bet, and maybe Google needs to be clearer on how that happens so that people have the opportunity to, instruct it in the Google experience they want.
You know what would be even better?
I should be chief of staff.
I should too. You know what would be even better though? They just put an option and you could just turn off AI stuff.
Oh, that would be too easy.
Right?
Stop that. That would be way too easy.
Because instead of writing all these algorithms and stuff and like, hey, maybe for this one I do want AI mode on, and for this one I don't. Or for most of the
Look.
time I don't, but maybe once in a while I do. Just let me do that with a button at the top. It's really easy. Choo-choo, click it on, click it off.
They could hire from any university for that. You don't need a Stanford grad for that, Christine. Okay.
Yes, I know. Overcomplication is such a. Anyway, our night. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
This is 100% laws of unintended consequence, and this is a weird
Yeah.
one. So there's a company called Tailwind, Tailwind CSS. They publish help docs to help people with programming issues, programming problems. They are a help desk that solves problems actively on the fly for people. They are a help service, and their business is going gangbusters. They're growing faster than they've ever grown, and yet they've lost 80% of their revenue year over year, and that's happened because even though they're creating tons of helpful content, the LLMs are gobbling up and giving the answers to people before they can call Tailwinds to get the answer.
Yeah, and because you have a question answer situation here, right? Like there's a specific question that has a definite answer, it makes it even more precarious for them. Because if you're like, how do I code this? Well, there's an answer for that. It's not a idea that you have to think through and is esoteric or anything. It's very solid. So that's
Now,
unfortunate. I guess I mean the
this is a worse problem than it might appear on the surface. So they're much more popular. They're growing faster and faster, yet their revenues are down by 80%. Those revenues are used to pay engineers to write those answers. If they don't have those revenues, they can't afford to pay those revenue, those engineers. And that's why they had to lay off 75% of the development team this week.
Yeah, you know, my advice, and tell me if you think I'm wrong, my advice to them would probably be create a second site that doesn't have everything on it, that you allow the large language models to crawl, and then just, but yeah, but you can't block Google, so that's true. But they could
Yeah, I
keep it
mean,
out of OpenAI and the rest of them, though, right? You could create a second site that only, like on a subdomain, and only has the content you are not worried about taking your traffic. And then have your regular site block those. You still have a problem with Google AI overviews, but you might get a click from a Google AI overview.
yeah, I'm not sure you can 100% keep your information hidden away from crawlers. And if you do, you're pretty much next to invisible. But there's got to be a link going to you somewhere, and not everybody respects the no index, no follow, or robots text. So I don't know if you can actually protect information like that if you make it available somehow.
Yeah, it's possible. And we do know that the large language models do ignore the robots text, not Bing or Google, but the others do.
You know what? I'm not even positive about Bing or Google. They hoover everything. They just don't necessarily publish it.
That's true.
Like I'm and I'm not I'm not sure on that. I don't have evidence, but I'm pretty sure on that. Like 99.9% sure. They hoover it
Sure,
all
if
up. They just don't publish it.
they just probably use a different crawler, because we don't know what all the crawlers do, and that crawler takes it in and just doesn't necessarily publish it. That could be very true, especially with AI
Okay.
training.
So we just talked about a company, Tailwind CSS. Smaller company, a food recipe blog called Inspired Tastes. They've been documenting Google's AI responses, be it in AI overviews or in AI mode, to recipes. They're Adam Gallagher, one of the two people, the husband and wife team behind the food blog, called this Google's AI Frankenstein recipes, where it was part of a recipe from one recipe blogger and another brand recipe, and changes it enough by sort of mixing and matching information what should come next in the recipe. Statistically speaking, the recipe is not real anymore. It's certainly not what Adam or Joanne Gallagher, the people behind Inspired Taste, meant to put out, and it tastes like crap. This could, kind of kill people's trust in your recipe blog, eh?
Well, yeah, and people may think, oh, they're just food bloggers, but a lot of these food bloggers actually spend a lot of time on their recipes, and they try to, like, there's one, that I see on TikTok and be like, I tried this. Well, tell me if you like it. If you don't, we're going to try it again, right? Like, they actually work with their audience to perfect the recipes. And so it is very important. Like, and also as someone who has a gluten allergy, it's very important too, because I may think something's gluten free and it's not, because there was some sort of weird AI recipe Frankenstein thing going on.
Before she got really sick, Shauna was a chef, a paper chef, and she made and
That's right.
sold
Yeah.
recipes, and she would spend months on a
Yeah.
dish to get it just right.
Yeah. They spend like kind of time on these things. By the way,
I
interesting
was her guinea
enough.
pig, trust me. I'd eat the same thing over and over and over again until she got it right.
So the other part of this story, though, isn't just that, because we've reported on the Frankenstein of these things before, but apparently the news, international and in the States, have picked up the story, and it's been on CBS Mornings, Bloomberg, Guardian, and so now the Penske, who has a lawsuit about AI overviews, Penske, Billboard Media, Deadline Hollywood, Fairchild Publishing, Google Derby Media, Hollywood Reporter, IndieWire, Rolling Stone, and She Media, some big names in there, has taken this on as part of their AI overview case, the food blogging issue, the Frankenstein
Good.
of the food blogging. So,
Well, it's a really good active example of how things get messed up in live time,
yeah,
and that
and
people
just
can
go to
understand easily.
this case was only filed on December 4th. So, you might want to look it up, or I'm not sure the easiest way to look it up, but it's United States District Court or District of Columbia, all these corporations against Google and Alphabet. A lot of information in there about their AI overviews and how they're harming publishers and things like that. So it is interesting to see that this has now become part of an actual case that is trying to go after the AI overview for stealing the clicks. So.
Okay, so this next one's kind of a weird one, okay? In that I don't even know what the heck the story was trying to tell us to
Wait,
begin
wait,
with.
wait. We had holographic friend in a bottle. Is it weirder than that?
It's weirder in that I understood
Yeah.
holographic friend in a bottle. This I'm not quite
Yeah.
sure I understand what the story's trying to say, but the headline is Google added LLM.txt to its website for other reasons than discovery. Then there's this long article that really goes on to say they added it for other reasons than discovery, but doesn't say what those other reasons are. So listeners might remember a month, 5 weeks, a month ago or so, we were reporting that Google had added pages and pages and pages of LLM text to many of its developer docs, such as Search Dev Docs. They got pulled off the developer docs site within a day or so after being noticed, but they remained on other Google
We always
sites.
ruin their fun.
And I did you actually look at these LLM.txt files?
Yeah, I looked
I
at
thought
this.
they were
I
really
looked at some of them.
interesting
But I think
in
it's
that.
funny. Like, they did this, and the SEO industry's like, "What? What are you doing?" So,
Really,
anyways.
it's just collections of links to articles and a précis of what the article's about. Thousands of them, though. Thousands of links to thousands of documents. And according to John Mueller, this was happening during a site-wide content management system change, site-wide CMS change. And the people who operated the content on those sites put those text docs up. Mueller got it removed from the site he's responsible for, but other Google sites still got them up. And they still didn't say why they actually put them there. They
Maybe for
didn't.
their
And did
own.
you see at the point in the article any reason? explained why they use them.
No, they didn't. And he even replied that they're not findable by default because they're not at the top level of the site. So it's safe to assume they're there for other purposes. Like they're hidden. You know, it also could be, I mean, they don't use large language models for, I mean, an LLM text for regular sites. That would be a massive undertaking. But if they're changing the site-wide CMS, they may have used it internally and written a little code to help the large language model find things.
So here's the question that prompted, exactly, and here's what prompted in my mind. If you're doing a large scale migration from one platform
Yes.
to another, is this something you have to think about,
I don't
or
think
something
we
you
do. I
should
think it
think
would
about?
probably be a Google internal. It would probably be that Google wrote its own code to use the large language model text file to help the.
While doing a large scale
Yeah.
migration.
Yeah, but I just think it's internal. I don't think it's a public thing. I don't think it's like on regular Google because it'd be too hard to manage for now. So.
Well, but apparently it's on a number of other Google sites.
Yeah, because I think they would be part of the migration or CMS change or whatever they were doing. I just think it's just Google had its engineers write something, had
Well,
an because
why?
it's not at the top level either. Like a
Or is
robot's
this
text won't be read if it's not at the top level.
because they're Stanford grads and they just have to overcomplicate things?
Well, maybe
I
probably.
don't I
Like
see,
I
I don't
said,
buy that because they're
I
very
could just turn
expensive
it.
Stanford grads.
Give me a button. I could turn it on and off. Can't do that.
Okay,
So,
so
no, I know they don't really tell us. There's really no big hints there, but I do think it's probably an internal process.
to add to the mystery about LLMs, John Mueller was asked directly if schema helps with LLMs in Google,
Wait,
and
it
he gave
depends.
the perfect SEO answer, which is
I see your joke. I'm sorry. It depends.
it depends. Yeah, well, I passed the punchline to you. Yeah, so John Mueller's response on is is schema helping with LLMs? Is it depends? It depends on the on what the website is. Some features do really well in. Okay, so is it important with LLM schema? It's really important with organic search. I can tell you that.
Yeah, it's really
I have
important.
had incredible success on
There's
e-com
the
sites using schema.
Sorry about that. I mean, interrupt.
No, it's okay. So, but if it's
The
important for organic, it's often important for LLMs.
so first, let me just add, John Mueller answered this as a personal question, not officially from Google. He also said this is not official guidance, but someone asked, does extensive schema markup actually help large language models understand your entity better, or is it just for Google-rich snippets? So just part of his quote, because you covered it really well, but just part of what he said is basically, some features thrive with structured data, to which I also count structured feeds. Pricing, shipping, availability for shopping is basically impossible to read in high fidelity and accurately from a text page. For example, of course, the details will change though, which is why it's important to use a system that makes it easy to adapt. Other features could theoretically be understood from a page's text, but it's much easier for machine learning, to read machine-readable data instead of trying to understand your page. Right, like always use recipes as an example, right? It tells you, does it have to figure out the time, the ingredients, and all that? Or you can just say, these are the ingredients, this is the time, this is like, they don't have to figure it out, it's already there. So it makes their resource load lower because they're not trying to figure it out.
I'm sure the Gallaghers from a couple stories up will have issues with that one, but go on.
And it's funny because he's like not trying to understand your page, which might be in English or in Welsh or pick any of the 7,000 languages that they read. So I didn't know there were 7,000 languages, I'll be honest. I feel a little ignorant there. Some visual elements rely on specific structured data. If you want it, then follow the instructions. They vary across surfaces. Companies will definitely change over time. If you wait, that type will be deprecated right after you implement it, of course. So make it easy to get it added to your site. I do know, for example, like for videos, and apparently people didn't know this because I told Bill Harcher and he's making a little possible plugin for it. But videos have to have watch pages, and it's been
Yes.
around for about 2 years. But someone last week talked to Bill and then made a big post about it. I was like, didn't you guys know that? But I had a
Well,
client
since
who had
nobody gives a
five.
damn. Like everyone knows that, but nobody gives a damn.
But no
Because
one gives a damn until they
you know
look at
what? Those
the.
watch pages, we all know those watch pages are like AMP pages. They're web pollution.
Right,
They're going to be web pollution. We know this.
but you have to
This
have them to
pisses
get
me
any.
off.
So I do. It's ridiculous. So I had a client though, when I did their audit, I looked at their video pages this last year, and they lost 5,000 videos in ranking.
Yeah.
Like they're completely de-indexed, and they were de-indexed because they didn't have a watch page. And the watch page is just for Google. It doesn't do anything for users, but if you have to use a special kind of structured data to get those to show up in those video slots on the home page. So it can be very, very important. But you know what I say? When I did a talk on this like 7 years ago, you always want to give Google the easiest version of your site to understand. And if you can define it with like structured data and you give it the machine learning information, then it doesn't have to try to figure out your page. So you're going to do better overall. But it's not a ranking signal, which is
No,
true.
there's no question. By the way, you do need watch pages that will get you back in video rankings. I had an e-com client with that had produced over 15,000 videos
Oh my
to promote their
gosh.
products, and they got delisted because they didn't have video pages. So you know what we did? We made 15,000 video pages, and yeah, it
Yeah,
works.
that's
It's
a
how
Google
you
thing.
feed data to the engines, but it is web
Exactly.
pollution.
I
Drove
agree.
me
Just like
nuts.
AMPLUS. Just like AMPLUS.
No, but anyway,
So,
I'm
but
sorry.
yeah.
That is one of my worst pet peeves of the last of 2025
Oh, same here.
was web page watch pages, because again, it's just pollution.
Hillhouse is working on a plugin and we're testing it. And if it works, it'll be available on the market possibly. And you could do those 15,000 pages and let it do the work for you, which would be great.
No, and then and excellent. And then there's 15,000 URLs that don't need to exist in the first place, but they
I
do need
know.
to exist because this is how you work with the machine. It's the
Exactly.
machine that I'm mad at.
We
Go on. Okay, I'm done. I'm done. I swear to God, I'm done.
gotta wonder how they're like, all their Stanford grads or MIT grads can't figure out how to figure the video on the page, but for some reason they can't. Because
YouTube
it's just,
went boop.
yeah.
YouTube went boop.
If you're not an SEO, this is not that funny of a story for you. But for SEOs, for a couple of years, you get this thing: video is not the main whatever on the page, and we de-indexed your page. And people are like, well, there's just one video on the page. What do you mean it's not the main video on the page? And video code is very distinct. It's usually an embed, or it says like video. So why they can't determine that that's the main video on the page, I'm not sure, because they could check the size of the video, which shows you it is the main video. But anyway, they couldn't do it. So we have watch pages, and you have to go look up the technical specs for watch pages if you want your videos to at least get any ranking. They may get indexed without the watch page. They usually don't, but if they do, they won't show up in like the homepage and the special slots for video. So, yeah.
Okay, John, to quote John Mueller again,
Like a John Mueller day.
a lot of SEO content is digital mulch. Blogs
Like
that exist
Johnisms.
solely to get rankings are living on borrowed time. They're not adding anything interesting or useful to the corpus of information that Google wants to be. So, Google might even appreciate it in the first week or two of its existence, and will nuke it thereafter.
Well, I love this quote that John posted from "Blogging is dead, long live the blog." Right? Like blogging is alive. You know the formula. Post like 1,500 plus words, three internal links, strategic subheaders, bonus infographic. And let's be honest, most of that SEO content is just digital mulch. If your blog exists solely to rank, it's living on borrowed time. By the way, those are actually good SEO constructs for people that are not necessarily 1,500 words. So. You don't necessarily want to ignore internal linkings or strategic subheaders, but if that's the only reason you're putting it together, then you may be unsure. You may be on borrowed time, and you may not. I mean, that's one of the things I don't tend to hit a lot, but they may be ramping up to it because they're going to have to need to get rid of AI digital slop at some point. So.
Okay. So 404 pages. This has been a debate in SEO. Do they matter? Don't they matter? Are they weighing your website down when Google comes across them? Is it a sign of poor webmastering that you have 404s present on your in your crawl stream or whatever? Apparently not. 404s, URL didn't get
Wait,
indexed.
wait. According
Doesn't
to who?
exist. According to John Mueller, okay, this is another
Wait.
John Muellerism.
This should be the John Mueller Day episode.
John explains why 404s don't really matter for SEO. 404, URL doesn't get indexed. It's an invalid URL. Lots of URLs are invalid. That happens. It's fine. 404s, 410s. Not negative quality signal. It's not how the web is supposed to work. A 404 says this URL is invalid, which is supposed to be that way because that's how you know a URL is invalid.
Now, I will say, just not to push back on John, but just for another point from a Google person, at a conference 2 years ago, I had a 2-hour conversation about 404s from a former Google engineer in search quality, and they told me that they're very important. They're putting a talk together about it so people understood why they're important. So I don't think they're important like on the small basis. I think it's if you have like many, many of them.
If you
hundreds,
continually direct the
thousands.
crawler to a 404, you don't give the crawler a way out. You have a site structure problem.
He also said you have a site quality problem as well. He's like a small number of 404s is normally good, but if you have lots of 404s, then you run into where Google starts to see that you might have quality issues because you're not tending to the site if you have.
Well, there you go. And
if
the 404 is part of your, especially if the 404 is from your top level navigation, if you're consistently sending Google somewhere where there's nothing, it will get pissed at you eventually. Eventually. And I stress the eventually part. Because again, it's a low quality signal. It's a bad user experience, a continually bad user experience.
Yeah.
And as Christine said, clearly somebody isn't paying attention to the website.
Yeah, if you have like 10% 404s, meh. But if you have like 40, 30, 40, 50% 404s, and that happens on shopping sites a lot.
Well, and again, where those 404s are and how they occur, if they're buried like on the 18th, umpteenth level, no one is going to care. But if they're on your main nav, that's a different story.
Yeah, or within 4 or 5 clicks from the root. That's still considered. I think Google only goes, I have to refresh my memory, but I think they only go down 7 levels, 6 to 7 levels.
On a regular crawl basis. They actually will crawl your entire website to get everything because they are that curious. But thereafter, they're not going to go like 18 levels deep. Not going to happen.
And by the way, my crawlers are set to 50 levels, and I frequently hit that at the end of the crawl. It says, these URLs are not crawled because they are below 50.
By the way, for goodness sake, more John Mueller.
Really, you better title this John Mueller Day.
I just might, actually.
For people that don't know, John Mueller spends every New Year's Eve answering questions from SEOs, and he did it again this year. So we should give him a big hat tip for all the work that he does for us. And since we have so many stories from him today.
Mueller, he wrote. That's what it'll be called. Mueller, he wrote.
I like that. That's good.
Okay. So page index without content errors. Has this happened to you? And how often has this happened to you? And if it has, how long have you let it happen to you? So if Google knows your page exists but can't extract content from it, it knows it's there, but it can't extract content. You got a server error that's just fluxing that up somehow. You're going to get a page index without content error.
Yeah, I need to make sure this is based often on the server, like excluding IPs and things of that nature. Now, Google says they give us all the IPs now, but I don't think that's probably true. And if Google is trying to get to something and they can't because your CDN or your server blocks them, they just will not be able to read the page at all. I will say there is one other, though, where I've gotten blank content, but it's not listed as page indexed without content error. And that is one with JavaScript, but also this is a very weird one, but the developers left in browser console messages, which is how they test their code. And so they often forget
to close them right.
Right. So they had an error in one. So all 900 pages of this blog were completely blank. There's no content at all, like no header, no footer, no anything. And I couldn't figure it out. I'm just sitting like, why is this like this? This doesn't make any sense. I checked JavaScript everything, right? And JavaScript wouldn't be it because the header and footer weren't in JavaScript. Anyway, I was so tired. I had it in web developer tools. I was running a test and I looked down and it goes browser console messages, 10, 20, 50, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 90,000. And then it dropped to 4. And what happened is that browser console message couldn't be read because it was taking so long to render get through it.
So nothing else was
eventually
there.
And eventually timed out. Yeah. So that's the kind of error also that can cause this. Google won't list it though as a page index without content error, but it is in the same category here. So if you ever do, you should always check your site with Screaming Frog screenshots or Sitebulb screenshots to see if your pages are fully loading or loading at all.
In the case that Mueller was writing about specifically, the affected site was using Webflow as its content management system and Cloudflare as its content delivery network. Sometimes you can get weird server configurations at Cloudflare. Sometimes they block like huge sections, like major IP blocks. That could be why this specific problem was happening. But
Yeah.
if you got a page index without content issue, you probably have something happening at page delivery or server level. Like
Yeah,
Christine's
definitely.
issue was comments to crapping out the page delivery, the content
And by
delivery.
the way, developers, take out your browser console messaging.
Well, no, don't. Just be really careful with them. Often they're hilarious. I love browser comments. Seriously, have you ever done this? You're looking through code and you're just having an awful day, and then you see some smart ass remark that was left by a developer,
It's
and it
true.
just, oh my God,
There
dude, that's so
was a
funny.
time, I don't remember if it was a website or just a page on Facebook or something, where someone would like post really fun, like some of this was just comments in HTML, but messaging on websites that developers had left behind of different sorts. And it was always really funny. There's some really funny ones
I
in there.
leave messages for the SEOs who are coming after me.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Watch for this, stuff like that, for sure.
Yeah. I love it.
I think it'll be appreciated. They'll never know who wrote it, but I think it'll be appreciated.
Yeah, I agree. I think so too.
Okay, so in a merchant retail panel, Google is showing a carousel that lets you scroll through the merchant's delivery, return, and payment options.
Yeah, it's just it's on the side panel, and it just shows you what you can do. If you go to the SEO Search Engine Roundtable article on this, it will show you the different screenshots. And Barry doesn't think it's new, but maybe it just hasn't shown everywhere before, or hasn't shown before to a lot of people. So,
Okay.
yeah.
The Google Maps hotel results has
Oh.
removed the visit website button. So, like, you're looking at search results for a hotel and you want to go check their website, you're going to have to shimmy around to get there. It's not going to be an easy click of a button because that button no longer exists.
Right, because they replaced it with nearby. Because I so much more need nearby when I'm looking up information about hotels than I need the actual website of the hotel.
Yeah,
I
well.
really have a pet peeve with whoever is doing maps right now. Do you ever use the graph in maps that tells you if a place is busy?
No.
Oh, I use it all the time because in Vegas, like you can have odd because we're a tourist town. You can have really odd like times when your restaurant shouldn't be busy, but you go and you can't get a seat, right? So they have this graph underneath that shows you how busy it is. My gym, Planet Fitness, has it in their app. It shows you how busy it is. They took it out of the main business profile. I had to click maps and go into the special maps profile for the business. Now there's like two business profiles. So to find it, like, and maps just doesn't work on my phone. It's just terrible. I really hate it at this point. It's just non-functional. But this is like another example of like why. Because if I'm at the hotel, I might want nearby. But if I'm not at the hotel, I probably just need to know what the hotel costs, what the hotel room looks like, and if I can get restaurants in the nearby area. But I don't
Yep.
need a nearby button, need the website.
Let's hope it's an experiment, seeing Google seeing how people react to it.
Or maybe Google wants them to book through Google.
Oh, well, Google absolutely wants them to book through Google.
Yeah.
Why they put the
Yeah.
nearby button is the question. That's,
Yeah,
sending people off to other options. But Google absolutely wants you to book through them. Absolutely.
yeah, exactly.
Okay, so if you're in Google Images and you
Is funny.
see a squished image within the Search Knowledge panel, it's probably a bug. Google's trying to fix it. And that fix should happen sometime in the next 24 hours.
You have such a skinny face. It makes me
Okay,
laugh.
speaking of skinny faces, this is the new singing bass of the 21st century. Vinabot, this is another thing. I'm pretty sure this has to be from CES
It is. It's one of the top
2026.
five. Yeah, from CES.
Oh, this won a top five award.
Yeah, well, it's
Okay,
from
so
ZDNet. From ZDNet, it was their top five.
from ZNet. See, up here we call it ZNet because it's like ZDNET.
Oh,
ZNet, it just rolls perfect.
no,
So,
it's Z.
picture frames that create moving and talking pictures using AI. So upload a photo and a short script. You generate an AI video that, well, you're going to have a conversation with you, act like a celebrity, or act like a real person. It's available on Kickstarter, and it's the Vinabot Talking AI Picture Frame. Again, one of the top five things from ZNet, in their coverage of the CES, weirdest CES things. And again, it's like the singing bass.
Well, also it can has high fidelity voice cloning, so
I think this would drive me insane.
but could you see like people playing jokes on each other, like putting a picture up with the voice cloning saying things to someone all day long? Like that could get funny or annoying, and things could get broken. But anyway, it's if you go to their website, it's someone I used to talk to them about website names, AI Frame. vinabot.ai.
I'll
So
be up.
and they're starting at $2.99 right now. They're cute though.
We promise our sponsors, Audience Key and Wix Studio, that that was entirely unsolicited and only came because we thought it was really
Yes.
weird.
Yeah, it's really funny, and it's one of the top five weird things from CES.
By the way, we want to thank our sponsors, Audience Key and Wix Studio, for being our sponsors. Happy 2026, Audience Key and Wix Studio. Friends, if you're writing, if you're looking for content suggestions, and if you're looking to do like Insta content optimization, check out Audience Key. And if you want to do an Insta website, get it real fast done, inexpensively with a growing set of tools, check out Wix Studio.
Wix Studio also, by the way, does accessibility. Just so people know.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually
It
becoming really
checks your
important to
accessibility.
them.
Yeah, checks your accessibility on your website.
Okay, we're done. We've gone around the clock and then some. Thanks again to Ricky and Brasco in the studio and Darren and Brandy in the front office at WMR.FM. On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hetcher from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology, recorded live to podcast for WMR on the 8th of January, 2026. Happy New Year. Be well, be patient. Love each other, respect each other, and rank well. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.